This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Hello, and welcome to The Twilight Show. Thanks for joining me. Today, my special guest is English teacher and teacher educator Gustavo Gonzalez from Argentina. We will be talking about the use of songs, TV, and film in the classroom.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
So welcome to The Twilight Show, everyone. I'm Graham Stanley, speaking to you live from Mexico City. As I mentioned earlier, on today's show, I'll be talking to Gustavo Gonzalez from Argentina about his work, looking particularly at using songs in the classroom. Gustavo is a freelance teacher of English and a teacher educator based in Buenos Aires, and he's also teacher trainer for the Oxford Teachers Academy. He graduated as a teacher of English in Pergamino, Argentina, where he comes from, and holds a postgraduate degree from the National University of Buenos Aires. He also holds a postgraduate diploma in education and new technologies and a diploma in neurosciences for educators. He's been an ELT since 1993, working as a teacher, school coordinator, teacher trainer, and presenter. And he's been delivering seminars and workshops all over Argentina, North, Central, and South America, China, Spain, and Singapore, talking about methodology and ideas such as the use of songs, movies, and the internet in the classroom, how to develop critical and creative thinking skills, how to make our lessons memorable, how to teach business English using humor, etc. He has contributed to the book Imagination, Cognition, and Language Acquisition, a unified approach to theory and practice, and has also written articles for teacher association journals and other publications. He's a former vice president of APIBA, the Buenos Aires English Teachers Association, and a former vice president of FAPI, the Argentine Federation of English Teachers. So there's lots to talk about there, and I'll be talking to Gustavo about his work after the Teacher Talk Radio News.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher, or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
This is Teachers Talk Radio News with John Gibbs. The first story this week is once again Ofsted. Following last week's news that, contrary to advice from the cross-party committee in the House of Commons, the government would persist with single-word assessments of schools. This week, Ofsted Chief Sir Martin Oliver announced that he would like Ofsted inspections to feel more like a peer review. At the Schools and Academies show on the 2nd of May, Sir Martin indicated that Ofsted had embarked on a reform journey, and he further noted that he wanted Ofsted inspections to feel like, in some ways, a peer review system. While Ofsted and Sir Martin have launched the Big Listen consultation, a group of former Ofsted inspectors, academics, experienced teachers and head teachers, led by Professor Colin Richards and Frank Norris MBE, have launched the alternative Big Listen. They've set up their own website and are accepting responses and views from across the education world. The 50% rule in English faith school admissions, introduced in 2010, stipulating that where newly established academies with a religious character are oversubscribed, at least 50% of their places would be open places, i.e. allocated without reference to faith, is to be scrapped in plans announced by the government. The government also plans to allow churches and religious groups to open faith-based schools for children with special educational needs, which campaigners warned could raise ethical issues. Proposals to scrap the 50% cap, which only applies when schools have more applicants than places, are opposed by Rowan Williams, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, on the grounds that it would be divisive and likely to penalise disadvantaged children by denying them access to local schools. While the government believes that faith-based schools give parents greater choice, encourage better behaviour, and also academic outcomes, Andrew Copston, the chief executive of Humanist UK, is quoted as saying, "The proposal to allow 100% religious discrimination in new state faith schools will increase religious and racial segregation." Teaching assistants are again in the news this week. While recent stories of their declining numbers, their stagnating pay, have been regular features of the news, this week, a survey reported in Secondary Education News involving 6,000 teaching assistants in England and Wales found that 39% are covering classes for at least 5 hours a week. A further 15% say they are leading full classes for at least 11 hours a week. National guidance states that support staff should not actively teach any classes they cover. But 75% of the teaching assistants said they have ended up teaching rather than supervising. Astrea Academy Trust, which controls 26 schools in the Yorkshire and Cambridgeshire area, is seeking to hire a new executive head teacher on a salary between £116,000 and £133,000 a year. These salaries might seem generous in the light that the St Ivo Academy, a secondary school in St Ives and run by the Trust, is making cuts for classroom resources, but it should also be placed in the light that the new executive principal position comes with three layers of management above it. Above the new executive principal would be secondary regional director for Cambridgeshire, Jo Mayhill Johnson. Above her, in the Trust's hierarchy, sits Richard Tutt, its director for secondary education, and above him, Rowena Hackwood, Astrea's chief executive. And the number of Astrea's employees paid at least £100,000 a year has increased from 7 to 10, from 2022 to 2023. It is reported that Ofqual have warned that exam results, GCSE and A-level, will be down this year. This will be the result of the return to pre-pandemic conditions, meaning candidates had no prior warning of what might be coming up in the exams, and the lost learning that resulted from the COVID pandemic. In an interview in Education Week, the statistician Dennis Sherwood once again stated his view that A-level and GCSE grades are only reliable to one grade either way. If you wish to listen to interviews with Dennis Sherwood, you can find them in the Teachers Talk Radio back catalogue, or follow many of these news items on the weekly review on Sunday mornings. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with John Gibbs. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back, everyone, and a warm welcome in particular to my special guest, Gustavo Gonzalez. Thank you so much for joining me, Gustavo. What have you been up to lately?
Hi, Graham. How are you? Hey, hi, listeners. How are you? I'm so honored to be here. So honored. So thank you very much for the invitation. I've been doing a lot lately.
It's our honor to have you here, Gustavo.
Thank you.
What have you been up to? Yeah.
Well, I've been teaching, of course, and I've been participating at some conferences. I couldn't make it to the IATSEFL conference last week or the week before.
The week before.
I couldn't make it this time, but who knows, maybe next year I will be participating. But I participated at my latest conference was at TESOL Spain, which was held in Cáceres. Yes, it was a really good conference. And I've been participating, in the last three or four years, I've been participating at TESOL Spain.
Yes. What did you speak about at TESOL Spain this year?
This year, I think I talk about the power of songs and stories. For making classes really engaging and meaningful.
Great. And that's part of what we're going to speak about later today. But first, Gustavo, I'd love to hear a little bit about your backstory, about how you became a teacher, what got you interested in education as a profession.
Okay, well, I try to make a long story short, right? I have always been a really passionate about music. Yeah. Ah. And when I was in, for the listeners, I am based in Argentina. I am living in Buenos Aires, but I was born and raised in a city 220 kilometers from Buenos Aires, which is called Pergamino. And when I was a student there, high school, that was my first touch with English. Mm. Right. And then I was planning to pursue a career in psychology or whatever. I had no idea about the teaching world. And I remember that time my father was unemployed and my parents couldn't afford, right, like to pay my studies in the big city in Buenos Aires. So I stayed in Pergamino, and a friend of mine who knew how much I loved English, and she was doing the teacher training college in Pergamino, he said, "But who's, why don't you start doing the teacher training college? It was for free. It was public."
Yeah. And
I did it, but just to try to understand lyrics of songs. That was the reason why I joined. And then all of a sudden, Graham, I discover how much I started loving teaching and the language itself. And it took me 7 years to do a major that lasts like 4 years, because I didn't have the level that my classmates had. But I think that it was great because they all had a first certificate level when I started, and I was coming from high school, and the level was not really good. And so when I graduated, and I was offered the possibility to do a kind of a licenciatura, is what we call it here in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And I started teaching at the teacher training college. That was like, I thought, this is it.
Right.
And believe it or not, I started combining my two passions, music and teaching. That's why I cannot conceive the idea of teaching without using songs. Music. And then I kept on studying, and now for me, as Descartes says, I think therefore I am. I think that in teaching, I always say this: I feel therefore I learn. I cannot conceive the idea of learning without an emotion being involved. And I think that what makes lessons memorable, the emotional engagement of the students and the teacher, of course, in anything you do in class.
Oh yeah, and I think
I agree with you. I have this combination of music, neuroscience, emotional learning, and of course the incorporation of digital technologies to enhance teaching, whatever that's possible. So then I moved to Buenos Aires after many years of teaching in the only bilingual school in Pergamino, then in a private school, public schools, teacher training college. And then I moved to Buenos Aires like 22 years ago, and I started teaching English in companies. And somebody told me, "Bro, why don't you present your ideas in a conference?" And so I did. And my first presentation was at the FAAPI conference. For the listeners, FAAPI is a association of teachers here in Argentina. Every year, teachers of English, of course, and every year we hold our national conference. It's the biggest event for teachers of English in Argentina. And I presented there, and that was the beginning of everything, Graham. And I strongly believe, and I hope you agree with me, that when you follow your heart, when you follow your passion, I mean, everything flows. And it's like you enjoy every single step of the way.
Oh, definitely. I think it's so important what you said about making lessons memorable. I think if you as a teacher or as a teacher educator, as you've become now since that presentation at FAAPI, are interested and passionate about what you do, then that comes across. And it's totally very difficult to resist that. In fact, it's very easy for teachers or for students, if we're talking about teaching, to kind of fall for that and become enthusiastic themselves. If you're enthusiastic, then I think it's half the battle, especially when you're teaching teenagers, for example. If you want to wake them up and get them motivated about something, you have to be motivated about what you're teaching first, or they'll just think, well, if you're not interested or excited about English, how do you expect me to be?
Exactly. I strongly believe that teacher motivation is as important as student motivation. And, and also the idea of teacher engagement, because sometimes we may find some issues, some topics that we may not be very comfortable with, or we may not like, but we have to find a way to believe what we are teaching, to find, because to reach our students, hardly will you reach your students if you don't believe what you're doing, what you're teaching, what you're saying, what you're just, the message that you're trying to get across.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I think that's the most important thing. And I think that's why as teachers we need to, you know, to embrace continuing professional development, to make sure that we continue to be enthusiastic about what we're teaching, not to just teach in the same ways, to learn ourselves, et cetera, et cetera.
The thing is that, I think that, I mean, CPD, continued professional development, is a must for every teacher of English, for every teacher, because things are changing very quickly, and we cannot keep teaching this the way we were taught.
No.
That's totally obsolete. Yeah. And so I think that these instances of professional development, attending conferences, becoming a speaker yourself, are different ways of keeping up with the latest trends. And and the idea of this, to keep learning all the time, to keep improving, so that you can be the best version of you when you're teaching.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's so important. So if we want to move on to, I think I'd like to move on to this idea of using, let's start with songs. What are you, a musician? Do you play instruments, or is it just that you love music? Like me,
I love music.
I don't play any instruments.
I don't play any instruments at all. Not, no, no, nothing.
What about singing? Do you sing? How is your singing voice, Gustavo? Better than mine, I'm sure.
I have a very musical ear.
Great.
I can hum a melody, but I don't have a singing voice.
Right. Okay. Right?
But I love singing. This is something that I don't do. But it's like I sing in my head. Whenever I listen to music, yes, I'm always singing in my head. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I remember when I taught primary learners English, and there were lots of songs. And I remember singing, And sometimes some of the students would look at me like, you don't sing very well.
Well, the same thing may have happened to me because I cannot sing well.
Yeah,
but such I a love shame, singing.
I love singing too. Nobody really would pay to hear me sing, for example.
I wouldn't do it professionally. But you know what I love? That some teachers are musicians, and they bring their guitars to class and they sing with the students, and that's great.
It's wonderful
because I think that the using songs in the classroom is the most effective drilling activity that you can think of for me.
Yeah.
Because nobody gets tired of singing the song over and over. And what you're doing is just going over and over the language. You're repeating the structure. You're, in a way, maybe not teaching structures, but you're helping students incorporate them without them noticing.
Yeah.
And that's one of the most powerful things that I consider songs are so useful and necessary when teaching a language.
Yeah, and there's so much interesting language in, for example, contemporary pop songs, etc., that you can look at. And most of the time, a lot of the students that you will be teaching will already be listening to these songs. I think it's probably better if you choose songs that they like as well.
Well,
what do you think about that?
Well, I have like two opinions about that. But whenever I choose songs that the students are familiar with, or they are singing because they are the in thing.
Mm-hmm.
I try to use songs which are not the versions they know. I try to use like covers or acoustic versions. So that way it's a kind of a slap on their brains, on their biological brains, and keep on providing them with a surprise element. So we can focus on the listening per se or on the discussion. And then we end up singing the original song, the one that they know. And it's for me, it's a lot of fun to present them with something, with some novel elements, or the song they know. Or sometimes I use songs they have no idea about.
Related to that, Gustavo, though, what about, I know there are some teachers that would come into the classroom and use songs that they like, that not necessarily the students would know or like. And I think I understand if there's something in the language that is interesting about that, that's great. But I always think that potentially if it's a type of music that the students don't particularly like, and I'm talking about teenagers, for example, here in particular, who might have very strong opinions about what they like and what they don't like, rather than adults or younger children who wouldn't really worry about that. But it could actually backfire, couldn't it? They could just turn off and not be interested at all.
Yes, and the thing is that if you choose songs that the students are really, if there's not a kind of a good purpose in using the song, and you're choosing a song that students don't like, the plan will backfire.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I have also seen, Graham, that has backfire is that many teachers overuse songs just to deal with vocabulary or grammar. So this may have a counter effect because you're using something that students love, songs, to do something that students hate, grammar, for example. And they may end up hating using songs because every time that the teacher brings a song is to do some grammar exercise. That's why I'm not saying that working on the traditional kind of exercises is wrong, but I think that there are so many more things that you can do with songs to help the students develop critical thinking, creative thinking, to get them talking, debating, expressing opinions. So I'm fine with the following Bloom's taxonomy, the LOTS, the lower order thinking skills, but I'd rather go for the HOTS, the higher order thinking skills. And I use songs as triggers or springboards for something else. Yes, and yes, if you use a song that just you like and you know, it will not have any effects, especially on teenagers. I totally agree with you. But what I do and what I did in the past, Graham, and that helped me a lot. I remember very vividly, some years ago, there was a very popular sitcom called Glee.
Glee, yes.
And Glee, yeah. And many students came to me and said, teacher, teacher, we heard this song. And you know what? The song was Singing in the Rain, Graham.
Oh,
like
really?
Sinatra. Yeah. And they were fascinated by the song because they had seen the song in the show.
Yeah.
And so I made a kind of comparative analysis between their version, the version that they liked, the Glee version, and the one by Sinatra. And then we started working. So, and then they started doing some research on which songs were being used in Glee, which were covers from oldies. And that was what I felt really good because I was able to use songs from my teenage years that had been like made covers in the program.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a really interesting thing, isn't it? Because with things like TikTok and Instagram, a lot of younger people are discovering kind of music made by previous generations, but have suddenly become kind of trending on these social medias. The typical one was that it was a couple of years ago now, I think there was that famous Fleetwood Mac song that was everywhere because of a video that someone made of someone skateboarding. And then suddenly Fleetwood Mac was flavor of the month again. It was like, why?
Yeah. he was back on the map.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't remember the song that you, yes.
I'm trying to remember it.
Yeah, I'm not an avid TikTok user. That's why. Yes,
no.
But I remember, I vaguely remember something of what you're saying. Well,
but I think it's just that it's like there are some classic songs that that end up becoming popular, and I always remember teaching teenagers, and some a lot of teenagers also go look back, especially now that we have the ability to do that for free with tools such as, you know, music streaming services like Spotify or Tidal or YouTube, etc. They go back and they listen to things that you're kind of surprised. You think, hang on a minute, that was made before I was born, let alone you were born.
And with this girl, I remember, and you will remember, when we started teaching or when we were students, we had no access to lyrics.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I remember as a teacher with a cassette, playing, rewinding, playing, rewinding, playing, stopping, rewinding, trying to understand the lyrics of a song to design activities. Now everything is just a click away.
Yeah, it's so much easier.
Exactly.
What about Gustavo? Have you come across any of the, and this might be controversial, I know a lot of people hate it, a lot of people are fascinated by it, I'm certainly fascinated by it, the AI automatic songwriting tools. Have you seen any of those?
No, I haven't even heard of that.
So
really?
And it's very, for me, it's very new. I've just come across it about 2 weeks, basically. There's one called, the best one is called udio.com, udio.com. And basically, in the same way that most AI, you just put in a prompt and it will create a response for you. And, you know, you can use ChatGPT to create lyrics, poems, etc. Well, this takes it a step forward. It actually makes the music. And you can decide so you can put in, for example, a song about Gustavo Gonzalez and his fascination with using songs in the classroom, in the style, no, actually, you can't say in the style of and a band, because that's a forbidden thing. They won't let you do that, which is to try and avoid that kind of, I think, potential plagiarism, etc. But you can sort of say, sorry, a country and western song with acoustic guitar, female vocals, and a strong backbeat, or a hip hop song with blah, blah, blah. And it will create it for you. Or, and this is what I think would be, is interesting for students. You could get students to write their own lyrics. So they work on the actual words, and you know, then they can upload it and they can select the genre of music and it'll create it automatically. And it's free at the moment.
Well, that sounds really, really, really
check
good.
It out. Check
yeah,
it
I will. Out. Definitely, I will.
I'll send you the link. And
please do. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I do? What I do with this ChatGPT or something? And I think that we have to be very careful. I hope you agree with me on how much we use AI.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because
definitely.
what I've seen is that somehow we are outsourcing brain functions and by overusing AI. But I've been using ChatGPT and it's been really good because on their eagerness to create something, prompting becomes essential. So they need to be as specific as possible when they are prompting. So they are using the language to do that when they want to create images. So it's a great writing activity where they're using the language for a real purpose.
Yeah.
And you know what I've done with songs in this case? I sometimes song lyrics may be very challenging for students. And so sometimes I go to ChatGPT, I paste the lyrics of a song, and I asked ChatGPT to transform the lyrics into a story.
Oh,
so
nice.
I present the students with a reading comprehension of a story, which is somehow I am scaffolding listening comprehension. When then I play the song, they start making connections to the story they read, the story we discussed, with some vocabulary that appeared in the story, that is vocabulary that will appear in the song. And it has worked wonders, Graham, in how much they have improved listening comprehension when you present the language in a different format. Yes, so the students can like pave the way into listening comprehension, into better listening comprehension.
Wow, that sounds amazing. I'm going to try that. And
But of course, you have to songs that tell a story.
Sure. I might steal that activity from you. I'll give you credit for it.
Okay.
I'll tell you why. Yeah. I'm actually writing the second edition of a book I wrote 10 years ago, and I'm looking for interesting activities with AI. But if I use that activity, I will definitely mention you. Is that okay?
It would be an honor for me. Is that okay? It's perfect.
Do you give me permission? Okay.
Yeah, of course. And I can even give you the song that I use with my students. Do you remember a song from the 90s?
Yeah.
The name of the song is Skater Boy.
Oh,
Skater
yes.
Skater Boy. So he was
Avril
a boy.
Lavigne, is
she
that
was
right?
Exactly. Yeah. And the song tells a story that for teenagers goes fantastically well.
Oh, wonderful.
And so I pasted the story on ChatGPT and said, can you transform the lyrics of this song into a story? And then there's something that you can do, this question of if you have mixed ability classes, can you adapt the story, this story that you have provided me with, for students with a low intermediate level of English? And of course, ChatGPT does all the paraphrasing.
Right.
And so the students read the story, understand the story, and then when they listen to the song, they felt, wow, teacher, we understood. And the song was not very easy to understand. And of course, all the debate came afterwards, and it was great, Graham.
Wonderful. Sounds great.
Yeah.
I think there's another activity that I've just come to mind. I haven't tried it, but I think would be quite interesting. That's similar to what you've just described. So you could take a song with a lot of slang in it, like, you know, a very hip hop song or any song, really, lyrics with a lot of song in it. You could put it into ChatGPT and ask ChatGPT to turn it into a formal story or statement, or completely transform the language from slang into formal English.
Totally.
Then give it to the students and ask them to guess the song.
Yeah, that's a great activity. And you know, something that that has happened with teenagers is that the kind of music they listen to today contains a lot of like taboo language or like four letter words. And I think that as teachers, we should be very careful with that because it's part of language in real life. And I believe that if a teenage student comes to you and say, teacher, I heard this in this song and I don't know what it means. They do what it means. They are just testing the teacher. No. That's a four letter word. You don't. I think that you should educate them in the use of the word because as non-native speakers of English, they will be using the word freely. And in front of a native speaker, this could be something really rude. Yeah. They are not aware of the impact.
I think that taboo language, swear words in lyrics, provide a really interesting opportunity for a teacher to talk about why this shocks, why it's not possible in polite conversation, or why you should use that language kind of selectively, and also talking about cultural differences. So, for example, swearing in Spain, I know, because I lived there for 18 years, is a lot more culturally acceptable than swearing in other countries. In fact, my wife, who's Spanish, when we moved to Uruguay, swearing in Uruguay is not very culturally accepted. It's very, very, very rarely you hear people in Uruguay swear. But my wife swore all the time in social situations. And you could see, I could see the reaction of the Uruguayans were like, oh.
Yes.
And it's quite interesting to look at that.
Yeah. And I think that as teachers, we need to consider that we are not just teaching a language, we're educating our students to be part of a global world, of the world. And you know what happens is that, for example, the F word, I can say it in English and nothing happens to me. But if you say,
but
how do you say this in Spanish?
We'd have to bleep you on this show if you said it.
Exactly. But if I ask you to say it in Spanish, I cannot say it because what happens to me, and it's what I feel happens to my students, is that they are not emotionally connected to the impact of the word in an English-speaking environment. Yeah. So exactly. I think that we need to tell them when to use the word, when not to, because they feel free to imitate what they hear in series and in songs. They are not aware. They are not aware of the context.
They don't think about the impact of the context. Really.
Exactly.
Actually,
so I think it's the teacher, the one who should tell them and should have a conversation about that. No, don't you ever say that word again. Because for teenagers, what it is prohibited is tempted. What it is taboo is inviting. So if you just tell them, don't do it, they will. They will keep doing it.
Yeah. No, it's an opportunity to sort of talk in more general terms about, if someone overuses swear words, then they just become fillers. You don't hear them.
Yes.
But then if someone uses a swear word who doesn't normally use one, it has the reaction that they intend it to have. It's like either the person is making a point or they're very upset or very angry or whatever. But just something I've remembered, a 13-year-old student of mine back in the day when I taught in Barcelona came to me at the end of the class. He was very shy and very kind of well-behaved. And he came to me at the end of the class. He said, could you tell me what and he said the N-word means.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I don't think that. And I kind of started talking about it. It's like, this is not a good word to use. It's very, very, it's one of the words in English that you really shouldn't use. It's racist, etc., blah, blah, blah. And then after that, and I said, where did you hear this? And then he said, on a John Lennon song. I don't know if you know the song I'm talking about. It's a song back in the 70s called Woman is the N of the World.
No, I don't remember the song.
Right.
Isn't the song Woman I can hardly explain that one.
No. This
Woman,
is another one. I don't think you hear it much nowadays for obvious reasons. But also back in, I think, the early 70s, early to mid 70s, there were a lot of people, a lot of singers using this word in ways that we would not think about using now. Patti Smith uses it in a song as well, and it's funny. I noticed that in the re-release of the album that where she uses it quite a lot, that song has been removed from that album, because it's a lot more offensive now
Yeah, but the
than
thing is
it
that,
was.
for example, the N-word used by members of the same community will be totally acceptable among them.
Yeah. Well, there
And
was, I
then,
don't know if you remember, there was this sort of big controversy with Quentin Tarantino trying to normalize it, and had white actors using the word, and
the
then
word,
until some of the black actors in Hollywood and directors sort of said,
No.
can you stop using this? This is offensive. And then he stopped using it. But it'll mean that a lot of his films now will actually probably seem to be that will come out as being seen as very offensive, I think, and maybe unacceptable. I don't know.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour, and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
Speaking of which, that's a nice transition into film. Could you let us know if we talked about songs, but what about film and TV? How do you use that with
Oof, I use
students?
them a lot. It's my like I think that as I told you about songs, now I use videos most of the time in my classes, not only to illustrate the grammar, but also just to keep up with the language. Language is alive and changing constantly. As a non-native speaker of English, I need to keep up with the new trends in language so as to
Believe
try to
me,
under, yeah.
it's not just non-native speakers, everybody, myself included. We
Really?
need, yeah. We need to be, as you get older, that language isn't used how, and since leaving, I've spent half of my life in Spanish-speaking countries now, so I'm not connected as much as I would have been if I was back in the UK, for example, to the culture there.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Graham, that I remember I am a real fan of the series Friends, the American sitcom Friends.
All right, yeah.
And when I graduated as a teacher, yeah, back in the 90s, I remember watching Friends for the first time and not understanding the jokes or not understanding the way they spoke, because all my training as to become a teacher has been with RP, received pronunciation. And so if you pronounce a word like Americans did or do, it was a mistake. It was a phonetics mistake. And I think that series are a great source for for different accents, different varieties of English, because I think that we need to, the aim is communication. And I think that using song, using movies, using series, you can just select different accents, different Englishes.
And, definitely. That's so important, isn't it?
I think it is. In this cross-cultural world, I think more than ever, we need to insist on making our students speak English intelligibly, not perfectly well.
Yeah.
Right.
No, it's that. And I think it's important to use different sources of listening, for example, because otherwise they just get used to your accent and your voice, whoever you are and wherever you're from. That's not good, because they need to be exposed to a variety of different accents and ways of speaking and pieces of language. So, and I think a lot of the course books, for example, the language there is necessarily simplified, but I think it's doing a disservice to students if you only use that, because then, as you said, with friends, when they are exposed and so much more, they are exposed to natural language, they wouldn't be able to understand it. So they need to start getting used to listening with subtitles or whatever to be able to.
Exactly. I always compliment the course book with authentic material. And you know, many teachers have told me, no, but my students do not have the level to understand. And I tell them, but I strongly believe that the difficulty does not lie in the text, but in the task. So you can present students with authentic material, a chunk from a series, which is very challenging, but with a very simple task.
Exactly.
But what you're doing is making them connect and listen to real English in real life, with all the failures and the background noises. And I think that's more like helping them understand or make them feel them or see themselves in future situations in which they may encounter. If you just keep working with the English that comes in the books, they will feel frustrated sooner or later when they go out to the real world, quote unquote, and they don't understand what people are saying because they were never exposed to that, to real English. I know that many teachers kind of speak very slowly so students can understand, and it's perfect in the class. But if you keep doing that, and you are the only voice they hear, yours is the only voice they hear, they will get used to that, as you said. Yes, and then they will not be able to understand people in other situations.
Yeah.
That's why I think that series and movies are so helpful to not only for this, but for so many other things.
Yeah, and I think it's great to encourage students in their free time, if they're watching TV and films, etc., to listen in the original language with subtitles, which is so much easier to do now. With streaming services, for example.
Well, I encourage them to listen to watch series or something with subtitles in English.
Ah, okay. So you know what? With the dubbed version, but with subtitles in English?
Yes. No. Spoken in English, the original language.
With subtitles in English.
Subtitles in English. And they see, and they sometimes say, teacher, but the person say, I'm going to, and then the subtitles say, will. So they start having some, training their listening skill, training their ear to distinguish what they hear and what they read. Yeah,
that's
and
interesting.
Sometimes we work on subtitles in Spanish because I strongly believe that we should use our mother tongue, our language one, in my case, Spanish, to help students make connections to the language they are learning.
Oh,
do you remember that many years ago? No, speaking Spanish in the class was forbidden. It was, but I think that we can profit so much from language one and make a contrastive and comparative analysis. And
I definitely think judicious use of the student's own language is important. If you want to say something, if you want to say something very quickly, it's easier to translate it, for example, rather than to try and get them to explain it in a lot of ways. There are lots of different ways in which I think using L1 is important and useful.
You know, in one of my presentations, once I prepared something called, which is called the fun side of using English and Spanish in the classroom. And we use, for example, signs in the street that have been badly translated. And so they say, okay, what do you think should be, what do you think is the right way to say this? And this, they're working on, I mean, using both languages in a very effective way. And they incorporate the concepts, and we worked on titles of songs that have been badly translated into Spanish. Yeah. And that's great because back in the 80s here in Argentina, we were not allowed to use any English names in songs or movies. So it was compulsory and mandatory to be translated into Spanish. And I remember the group of, the group AHA. Well, the LP I remember was called Hunting High and Low.
High and low,
Hunting High and Low, which is an expression that means, I mean, searching everywhere. And I remember, well, this is in Spanish, you will understand, but maybe not every listener will understand. The translation was Casa Mayor y Menor, which has no connection with the meaning of
which casa mayor and casa menor
Casa Mayor y
is
Menor.
menor. That a type of hunting, isn't it? So it's a
It's
literally, it's like big game hunting or
exactly.
hunting for rabbits. So it's very
Yeah, and
different
I
to the
remember
actual.
a classical song, one by the Beatles, Don't Let Me Down. The official name in Argentina was No Me Dejes Caer, which would be Don't Let Me Fall Down. And the trust and so it lost total sense.
Another good
Yeah.
activity which I've done before is a lot of
Which one?
the as you said, a lot of the film titles are very different when it comes to translations. So if you take
Sure.
very popular films or films the students would know and look at their Spanish translations and then translate them into English.
Yeah.
So, and then present these. Have you seen these films? And then you tell them they're the translated films. They're the Spanish translations of the
Yes.
films. What are the real names in English? And that's a nice little warmer activity for students.
Totally, totally. Yeah. And they are just like igniting curiosity. So you're just giving them something meaningful to do. Yeah, they're maybe Googling information for a purpose, like, or coming up with their own ideas on what the, and sometimes there's no connection between the original name in English and the translated version of the movie in Spanish. Yeah.
And I don't know if you've ever noticed, thinking about subtitles. Have you noticed the deliberate mistakes in subtitles that are there? So it's usually when it's something that doesn't affect the plot. Quite often, the translator will use a different number, a different amount of money, for example, if a number of mention of money or number or time, etc. And I always wondered that. Why they made that mistake? It's so easy. But I think my theory is that it's the translator saying, "Hey, I'm here," because it draws attention to the subtitles that normally people
Yeah.
don't notice. And I think it's one of those sort of professional things that translators do without saying it, because
I
it's
hadn't
happens
thought of that,
so.
but
It
yeah.
happens so much, believe me. Once you've spotted it, you see it all the time if you watch films and subtitles and know the two languages, for example.
I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of
Whoa.
interesting. So
Yeah.
is it generally contemporary film or TV clips you use, or do you go and use things like from popular TV shows like Friends that are always going to be well received?
A little bit of everything. I know that some of my students do not like Friends, so I won't be using examples from Friends if I already know that they don't like it. So right. I think it's very important for teachers to get to know their students.
Yeah.
So you can decide what material you're going to use to complement the coursebook if you're using a coursebook.
So how do you do that, Gustavo? Do you give them some kind of survey, or do you just talk to them at the beginning of the course?
I just talk to them, and I ask them to about their likes, dislikes, what kind of things is what they would like to do in class, what mm-hmm. things are the things that they don't like. So it's a kind of a negotiation at the very beginning of the year, and then you have to, of course, to respect their choices.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think this has been very effective for my classes, because I listen to their voices and I act yeah. consistently. I give them the possibility of choice. I mean, I'm telling you this because I strongly believe in this idea of learner autonomy.
Yeah.
And this question of learner autonomy is based on, I mean, voice, choice, and agency. And yeah. I think that giving the students, empowering the students with small things, as giving them the possibility of making small choices based on the things they like, opens a world to them. Yeah, because they feel that they're the important part of the class they are.
Yes.
And so maybe if you have a very big, a big class, it's a little bit difficult to please everyone. But it's a question of just making concessions and agreements with your students.
Yeah, and
it has worked very, very effectively.
Yeah, that's so good.
And sometimes I use things that I like, of course.
Of course.
But when I use something that I like and I am so passionate about it, I don't know, they can feel my passion. And even if they don't like it, out of respect, they respond effectively.
Yes, yeah. I remember, again, some time ago, I taught a class of sort of late teens, early 20s. They were studying film TV production. And that was quite interesting because they were obviously very interested in kind of learning about film and TV production. So I used to bring in things that I knew that they didn't know, that were older than them, but that were interesting pieces of film or TV, like little clips from classic films that most of them hadn't seen before, because it was like, oh, that had interesting language in, but that they would be just generally interested in that from a professional point of view, because that was what they were studying and learning about.
Yes.
And the feedback I got at the end of that course was like really positive. There was a lot of students who said, oh, I'm so glad you introduced me to, and the name of the classic films, etc., because I would never have come across that. And it's I've gone and watched all of the films of that director, etc. So I think it's important, I think, to definitely not ignore what you know or what you like, because you can kind of introduce things to students that they may appreciate, definitely.
Exactly. It's like you ignited a flame.
Yeah.
By doing something that you loved. Yeah, because you use something that you liked.
And I've done that with songs as well. I've taken in songs that I like, but things that I think they might not like or might not know or could like, and use that as an example of like, did you like that? Why not? Why didn't you like it? Why did you and have that discussion about what kind of why don't you like that type of music? Is it just because it's old? Is it the style of music? And that's a really interesting discussion with late teenagers, I think, because when you have early teenagers, I think the music they listen to, what they like and what they don't like, is so much part of their identity, which is when teenagers are starting to get older, they become more open-minded, I think, to other kinds of things.
Yeah. And doesn't it happen to you that sometimes the students are so eager to discuss something, but they don't have the language to do it?
Yes.
And I've heard teachers say, no, do it in Spanish, in English. And they stop talking.
Yeah.
I rather have them discuss something in Spanish, in their own language, and then report to me with the specific language they know,
Yeah.
rather than not having them discuss at all.
Oh,
Because that
yeah.
way they're just helping them develop the critical thinking skill that we talked about at the beginning, or the creative thinking. They have the need to say something, and language should not be an impediment for them to do so. So
Yeah.
I allow them to have a discussion in Spanish, in my case, and say, okay, now, how can you summarize what you said with the language you know? And they
Oh
feel
yeah.
like doing it.
Or you try and give them that language, but unobtrusively without cutting them off, basically. Or, write down some choice phrases in Spanish and then put them on the board and look at it together after the discussion has sort of happened. Yeah.
True.
Great.
And it works.
So
And it works.
Gustavo, another thing I saw in your
Yes.
bio, which I'd like to ask you about, which you've touched upon briefly just there, which is what reminded me, is about this idea of developing critical thinking skills with students. How do you approach that?
Well, the thing is that based on my experience on the many classes I've taught, students are used to copying and pasting. When you have a kind of reading comprehension, I've seen them saying, "Teacher, I cannot find the answer in the text. The answer is not in the text," because they look for the exact words that are presented in the question, and they look for the exact words in the text. And so I think that they need to learn how to infer meaning, how to evaluate and analyze meaning. And I think this is something that AI will not help them to do. So that's why I push them to think critically about anything I teach them while presenting them with in class. And it takes time because everything for them is just a click away, and they don't like to think.
Yeah.
But what happens? They want the easy thing. But in my class, I want them to think, to elaborate concepts. And
Yeah.
once they get into the habit, they do it. But you have to be consistent. It's not that today we are going to develop critical thinking. No, it has to be somehow
It's
to go.
cross-cutting, basically.
Exactly. I
Yeah.
was looking for that word. And what I do is, if we're going to work on a song, for example, just for maybe a listening comprehension, we may do one stanza just to fill in the blanks. But then I will just go deeper and ask them to think. Why do you think this person said this in this line? Who is he or she talking to? Similar to some questions that appear in international exams. This question of
Yeah.
inferring meaning. But of course,
Yeah.
whatever you do to help them develop critical thinking has to be attached to something they like. So my connection is try to move maybe the text that they are reading or the lyrics they are listening to something in their lives, something that they can relate to.
Yeah, that's so important, isn't it? Basically, to be able to make everything relevant to the lives of the students is crucial when it comes to that. And then, yeah, I think this idea of making that kind of critical literacy cross-cutting and having it in mind is much better than trying to treat it as a separate, discrete
And this
thing.
question of critical thinking goes hand in hand with critical literacy. I mean, they tend
Yeah.
to believe that everything they find online is the word, is
Yeah.
the truth. And so we need to help them see, I mean, what is the source of this web page? Is it reliable? How can you tell? And in some way, you need to teach certain aspects of critical thinking because they don't know how to analyze something critically because of this old school approach where Tom and Mary went to the park last night. And the question is, who went to the park last night? And then another question, when did John and Mary go, Tom and Mary go to the park? So this was copying and pasting. There was no thinking.
Yeah,
there was no room for thinking.
Yeah.
And I think that as teachers today, more than ever, we need to make room for thinking to happen.
Yeah, that critical literacy is so important and becoming more so with, as we talked about with AI, because AI has the ability to produce things that ChatGPT is renowned for hallucinating, for in making things up, because it's not a fact. It's not meant to deliver facts. It's meant to deliver examples of language that a lot of people, students or teachers included, are using it to kind of produce facts, answers to questions. But the answers to the questions are just examples of language as far as ChatGPT are concerned. And quite often they are factual, but not always. There's so many people talking about how if you use it to try and research, you get all these sort of, it invents things about papers that were never written or evidence that was not produced and stuff. Yes. And I don't know if one actually, it's quite an interesting thing to have students, for example, use the tool to research something they know about. So if they know something, a famous person they know very well, a musician, a TV actor, or just someone they know about, or something, a place they know very well with, and get the ChatGPT or the other AI tools to write a little piece about it in English, and then they have to spot the mistakes, the things they know are not right. And it's quite interesting with ChatGPT, for example, only going up to, I can't remember what year it is, the free version only goes up to 2021 or 2022, I think. So
think
if
so,
you
22.
Ask ChatGPT to tell us about when, and you know about something, a meeting between two musicians or an interview or a film that was made by an actor, if it was made after ChatGPT's cutoff, then it will invent something, and then you can actually have a text that shows the students something that is definitely not true. And if they know about it, then they can spot the mistakes. Those kind of things are quite interesting, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And there are so many things that they can do if they are well guided, well directed towards the tasks.
Yeah.
Or maybe even they can come up with ideas.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I think that we should consider AI as not as an enemy, but as a kind of language companion.
Yeah. It's a bit like, the automatic translation tools. You use them to help you save time. But you don't expect it to produce perfect results.
Exactly. I was thinking of how much everything has improved. These online translators, at the beginning they couldn't even translate idioms or idiomatic expressions. And this has been improving more and more.
Yeah, I mean, I, for example, have as my ambition, although I'm not doing much to make it real, to learn Brazilian Portuguese this year. And I'm finding it difficult to find the time to do anything. I think I probably need to sign up for a class. I was going to try and just do it through using, I was going to try and use ChatGPT to teach me Portuguese, but also use some of the self-learning apps, because then I would also see how effective it is. But I just haven't found the time. But I still have that in mind. But certainly at the moment for work, when the documents are in Portuguese that I need to read, I'll put it through Google Translate, and it gives me enough context that I can understand it.
Yeah. And have you tried translating with ChatGPT or not? Or you go to Google Translate directly?
I go to Google Translate directly for translations, but maybe I should try ChatGPT as well. I don't know which would be better. Have you tried?
I'm always experimenting and testing to see how they work and see how something works and something doesn't.
Yeah.
What happened to me once, I needed to find some samples of 55 word stories. Mm. And I was not at home and I didn't have the book with me. So I didn't have the samples and the authors. And I went to ChatGPT. I said, could you please give me 6 examples of 55 word stories and their authors? And it was not a translation thing. And ChatGPT gave me examples of 6 word stories, not 55 word stories. And I said, no, I think you misunderstood what I was, what I need. I need 6 55 word stories. And again, ChatGPT provided me with 6 word stories. 6 word stories are a genre in literature. And then I thought, of course, ChatGPT is not a search engine.
Exactly.
It's a generative tool. And then just to test, I asked ChatGPT, could you please provide a 55 word story? And of course, ChatGPT created a 55 word story.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get what I needed. So
right.
That was a kind of a mistake for me, for my part, in asking ChatGPT to do some search, to work as a search engine.
Yeah.
But no, I haven't tried the translation thing.
What I think works best for AI for searching is the Google Gemini tool.
Yeah.
That is connected to up to date. And what I find is really interesting when I've used that is that it provides references. So what I did recently is I am tasked with trying to find out how many English teachers there are in the Americas. We need to know that information. So I need to know how many English teachers work in primary and secondary schools in Argentina, for example. And I have asked Google Gemini that. And the interesting thing it says, if you ask ChatGPT that, it will come up with an answer that you don't know if it's right or not. But if you asked Google Gemini that question, which I did last week for all of the countries in the Americas, because I need to find the information, it says, that information is not publicly available, so I can't help you. But you could try checking these papers, and it gives me links and references to actual real papers. So I can then go in, right, that might be a source of how I can find out about it. So it doesn't give me the answer I'm looking for, but it tells me, I'm sorry, I can't help you because I don't have that info. But you can try looking here. So it's kind of, that's more effective than just using a search engine, which will just come up with a list of results that you need to check and see if there's anything of interest, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you're right. Google Gemini, is that the one you mentioned?
Yeah, and it's, again, I think it's free for 3 months and then you have to pay for it. I think I haven't looked into it, but it looks like that could be the future of search.
Yeah, if it's so reliable, I mean, I wouldn't mind paying for it.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to be the future of research?
Future of search, not research.
Okay.
I think rather than, I think that's what Google are positioning it to be. And also I think they're trying to make it different from ChatGPT because ChatGPT is just a large language model that just, it's wonderful. It produces language, but it doesn't produce facts. So I think Google are trying to make their tool in competition to make it different and to make it deliver more facts than ChatGPT will ever do. So I think that's kind of interesting how those two tools are becoming how they're differentiating, I think, because I think they know that they can't just, if they, I think they started a tool called Bard, which is decommissioned because they realized that Bard was just trying to copy ChatGPT, and now ChatGPT is just, they've got the market. So they need to differentiate, I think.
And so we still don't know what's yet to come. We don't
know. No, well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
That songwriting tool that I saw
is
an example. It blew my mind.
Graham, about the songwriting, it's just
I'll send you a link. I'll send you a link.
Please,
but for
please
the
do, because...
benefit of the listeners, it's udemio.com, and it's completely free at the moment. And it is so... I mean, it probably uses ChatGPT for the lyrics, but then it has its own way of... And it literally, it's in within 30 seconds, it produces a 30 second song clip with lyrics. But then you can add to it. So you can say, add the next section, add the next section, add the outro, add the intro. You can edit it. You can remix it. You can put your own lyrics in and just get the music. You can put individual instruments in. It doesn't always do it correctly, but that can be quite funny.
But, and you know, I was thinking when you were saying this, I have some students who are musicians or singers.
Oh, they love this.
This would be fantastic.
They'll love it, or they'll hate it.
Exactly. But it's a great trigger for them to talk in English, right? About something. Yeah.
Ooh, but
no,
also,
I'm going to use it, definitely.
But also, it's a great way of them looking at vocabulary of music, because they have to put in female vocalist, guitar, drums, bass, fretless bass, blah, blah, blah. You can put in all these things. And then you can, in the website, it gives you the a list of exact, you can listen to what other people have produced. When you go to those songs, you can see the lyrics and you can see the prompt. So you can see the prompts that other people have used to produce those effects. So you can then listen to the genres, reflect it. You can detect things that are not right.
Yes.
It's fascinating. So much so that I was introduced to it. And the first day I was introduced to it, that was it. From when I finished work to 11:30 at night, I was just making songs and playing with it.
And I think I will do the same the moment I get the link.
Yeah.
When you send me the link, I will be doing
I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it's funny. I shared it on Facebook and in a teachers group. And the reaction now, when you share AI tools, there's a type of teacher who are kind of, they're embracing them and they're interested in exploring them. Like me, like you, who were kind of like, that's amazing. They were just fascinated by the ability to do that. And then there are other teachers who've just decided, like one of the response from a couple of the teachers that I shared this with was like, I'm not interested. I'm not going to give any attention to AI, especially when it comes to creative. They're worried about AI replacing songwriters, artists, etc. They're kind of rejecting it, and I kind of understand their fears or their that reaction. But my attitude is, like it or hate it, this is not going back in the box.
Exactly.
This Pandora's box is open now, and you have to be able to understand what it's happening and use these tools and see what they do to be able to talk confidently about it. If you just ignore them thinking they're going to go away, you'll be left out of the conversation. You will also not be able to speak from the point of view of knowing. You'll just be in ignorance and come up with your own ideas about them. For example, an example is a lot of people say it's plagiarism. It isn't plagiarism, it's something else. ChatGPT and those other large language models have been trained on text, or the image generators have been trained on images. But what they produce isn't, in most 99%, I think, of the time, not copies of something. So it's not plagiarism. Unless you rewrite the definition of plagiarism, but it is something else, in that, you know, we need to understand it better to be able to know what kind of reaction we should have or what kind of regulations or...
Yeah, but everything has happened so quickly, so fast, that it's we haven't had the time maybe to, or they haven't had the time to analyze and see where this is going or what can be done. Yes.
Yeah, and just when you try to start working out what's what, it leaps forward as well.
Yes. Yeah, but I don't think that this will replace songwriters or no. It would be just something to help them, maybe.
I think there's a lot of there are big question marks, aren't there? Basically, but I think that's in it's in our power to decide.
Yeah.
So, for example, we the people. Are the people who are using these tools or not using them? So I think the teachers I know who have decided they don't want anything to do with them and they don't want to know about them, they don't want to use them, I think their attitude is like, well, if we reject them, these tools won't be used. But I think I'm not quite sure that will ever be the case. And I don't think regulations are going to be able to stop them, because you know if regulations are imposed on these tools in certain countries, well, they won't be imposed in other countries and other countries will take advantage. So I think that's why I don't know, it's such a minefield. There's so many different potential futures at the moment, but I have to say I do know of a situation, I've spoken about it before, where graphic designers have been replaced by freelance graphic designers have been replaced by one prompt designer in a publishing company in Mexico. Yeah.
Well,
so that has happened.
To
save costs and to save time.
Yeah.
So rather than commissioning their graphic design work out to three freelance designers and waiting a long time, they've employed for a fraction of the cost an in-house prompt designer who can do it all with AI generated tools. So I do think the worry that there will be disruptions in jobs. It's already
even in songwriting.
Well, with writers or, you know, musicians or filmmakers, etc. I think I don't see myself reading AI-generated literature.
Okay, no, me neither.
Because it's not what interests me about literature. But if the writer has used tools to help them write better or quicker, then that I'm okay with that, to be honest. You know, there are spell checkers. That's a tool.
Yes.
You know, tools like Grammarly that looks at your grammar or how many adverbs you use. And there's a tool called Hemingway that in particular looks at your adverbs if you're a writer and suggests you remove them or change them. There are all sorts of tools that people use that maybe those writers wouldn't consider AI, but they're kind of like an AI. So I don't know. And I think it's in the same way that if you look at the digital camera, and the phone camera after that, suddenly made photographers of us all, but it hasn't replaced the photographer or photography, because the people who want to do it well, they do it and they they receive. If you're very good at it, you'll receive commissions and you'll be able to work doing it. And I think the same is true of it'll make writers and artists of us all, but that doesn't mean it'll make us very good writers or artists. And also we're not really writing or producing art. We're just getting a machine to produce it for us
To produce it for us. Yeah.
And making it. And that that's not the reason why people write. Or, you know, I write a lot. I write fiction because I enjoy writing fiction, and because I want to, I want to understand fiction through writing it, and I don't particularly need to publish it. I just, you know, in the same way that someone will pick up a guitar and strum a guitar, they don't want to be a, they're not doing it to be a professional musician. Yeah. But I think you get an appreciation of literature or writing or through doing
it. Have you ever considered like publishing your work or not? Your fiction?
I think I've had a short story published, and I'm looking at self-publishing, and I'm in writing groups and stuff. So it is something I'd probably like to do, but I think
whenever you have time.
It's more something I do for me.
I enjoy it.
And it's the process I enjoy, not so much the product.
I totally see it. Yes. Yeah. And nothing can take so away.
I think that's the same thing. You know, my dad paints. He doesn't paint to sell paintings. He paints because he enjoys painting. And he,
for the joy of it. Yeah.
For the joy of it. And because the more he does, he sees himself getting better. But he doesn't have any, he's never had any ambition to sell paintings or become a professional artist. It's that, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
And I think that's that, when it, to take it back to AI, I think even if AI can do all of this for us and do it better than us, it's like, you know, it, because now AI is the best chess player, for example, it doesn't mean that humans don't want to play chess. What it means, the only thing it's done is that it's meant that if you don't have anyone to play chess with, you can still play chess.
I just love the analogy. I loved it.
So it's like, if you can't draw or paint, and you don't have the skill set, you can use words to create art and get enjoyment out of it. That's what people are doing. It's not really, that aspect of it isn't really taking away from people who have the skill or talent to paint. And it wouldn't, you know, I write, but I wouldn't use ChatGPT to produce. I'm not looking to produce products, you know, to push a button and then have a novel or whatever they're done. ChatGPT, because I get the pleasure of writing.
I was going to say that ChatGPT will never give you the pleasure or the joy you get from writing.
And you'll never, you know, if you produce it, you'll never think of yourself as a writer because you're not.
Yeah.
You're not a writer. You know, I use these tools like Midjourney, for example, to produce images, and it, you know, they're fun. And if which I need one, a quick we, image we, for
which one do mid, you use, Graham?
Midjourney is the one I use.
Yeah, Midjourney. Yeah.
But I'm going to look at some of the others because my brother tells me that some of the others are better now than that and cheaper. but I use images for blog posts and stuff because it's more legal than getting blog posts that have copyright to it. Images that have copyright to it. So for teachers who want images for class, for example, it's better they use these tools than steal other people's images without permission.
Totally, yes.
And it's quicker than them trying to find an image that has been published under free use or copyright, Creative Commons copyright, to be able to use as well, because they might have difficulty in finding exactly what they want as well. So for that kind of use, I think it's really, I don't see any conflict. Yeah. They're not going to commission an artist to produce images for class or for a blog post, are you? But, you know, perhaps it is taking away from that example of the graphic designers being replaced by a prompt designer. That is taking away people's livelihood and work. And I think we're going to see more of that. And that's unfortunate. But I think just as there were photographers who lost jobs when digital photography came into play because people didn't need to commission photographers as much as they did. Well, this is going to transform lots of different aspects of
Yes, you're right.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
Anyway, just to finish, Gustavo, and to pull us
time flew.
Just to pull us out of the rabbit hole of AI that we've dived into, I'd just like to hear a little bit about your work with teacher associations, and then we'll wrap things up.
Okay, well, I used to be the vice president of FAAPI, association that I mentioned, and I also was the vice president of APIVA, which is the English Teachers Association of the province of Buenos Aires. And I think this is very, very important to be a member, to belong, to do something for the community. Unfortunately, not many people are responding effectively. Mm. But I think it's a way of, you mentioned the SIGs, the special interest groups. I think this is, they are so important, just to have someone to talk to about something you love, your areas of interest, being like, it's a bit phonetics, history, linguistics, pragmatics, whatever. And I think it's something that we need to keep alive. Yes. I don't know. I can't find the word just to say that just to celebrate officially our profession.
Yeah. No, I'm totally agree with you. I'm not at the moment involved in a teacher association, but I have for many years been involved in IATEFL, for example, and really, I think I see the benefits of when teachers come together in a teacher association, and it's a shame that. Perhaps since the pandemic, I think a lot of teacher associations have seen membership drop, and I'm hoping that will change because I think it's a really great thing to do.
Yeah, and the thing is, the membership, they need to see what's in it for me. What is what the association will give me? And it's more than what the association can give you, but what is what you, as a teacher, can give to the association and to the community, and then to organize or to give opportunity to teachers who may want to climb the career ladder and start presenting or become presenters and start small within the association. I mean, you can have a kind of a possibility to discuss how much a teacher should charge as a kind of guideline. Yeah, because it all depends on where you live, if it is a big city, a small city, if it is in Buenos Aires, or if it is in another province. But I think there are so many things that can be done, and I think that we need to support and back up our English Teachers Associations Become a member. I would like more people to become members and to be more connected to the associations.
Yeah,
IATF is huge. So is ISOL.
Yeah.
But then we have the small ones in each country, yeah. Maybe.
Local ones. I think Argentina is an example of, well, there are lots of different regional associations.
I think we are. Yeah. We are like more than 20. I don't know. I don't exactly remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember the exact number, but it's more than 20 for sure.
Yeah.
Yes. And all of us.
Whatever makes sense. Happy. Yeah. Whatever makes sense to you as a teacher, I think, to become involved and just to have contact with other teachers that, you know, that work in different contexts. I think that's the important thing.
Yes.
You probably, you know, most teachers now have contact with teachers in their same school or they're teaching the same subject and stuff. But actually, when you join a teacher association and start meeting teachers there, you'll find people are teaching in all sorts of different contexts and you can learn a lot from that.
True. Yeah. Sometimes when I give talks and I tell the teachers, this activity have worked really well with my students, but I don't know if they will work as well with yours because I don't know your students. I don't know your context. And so the same happens with the association, because when you get together and you start talking about the needs, their interests, you see, oh, I'm going to say what this association did because I hadn't thought of that. And this is a question of creating communities.
Yeah.
And I think this is very important in our profession.
Exactly. So listen, Gustavo.
Yeah.
I think we'll have to end it there. Otherwise, we'll spend all day talking to each other. I feel I could definitely do so with you. It's been
totally
fascinating.
Same for me.
Really enjoyed it. So thank you very much for your time and for agreeing to do this. I think a lot of the listeners will get a lot out of our conversation. I hope so, at least, anyway.
I hope so. And thank you for inviting me, Graham. Thank you very, very much.
A pleasure. I'll definitely invite you to come along again sometime. And I look forward to the next time we are able to meet in person for a coffee or a beer.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah. And you can count on me for any other episode. Yeah.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you very much. Take care.
Thank you. You too.
So that brings us to the end of today's Twilight Show. Many thanks to today's special guest, Gustavo Gonzalez, and all of you who joined us live. And so that's it for me. There are Teachers Talk radio shows all week on all manner of interesting topics. So please listen in live or to the recordings. And I hope you will join me again next week at the same time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.